Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America College podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. This podcast is powered by Louisville Slugger. Leave your mark with a 2014 attack, raid, and assault bat lineup this season. Stronger, lighter, farther with Louisville Slugger. Aaron, big weekend in college baseball. Feels like it was really the first good week of the season in terms of a lot of good matchups. Top 25 matchups, conference play starting pretty much around the country. And some of those matchups that you wrote about in weekend preview delivered this weekend. Carlos Rodon and Luke Weaver went mano a mano in Tallahassee in a good pitchers matchup before FSU wound up pulling away in that game, and they pulled away and swept the series. And then Vanderbilt and LSU in a highly anticipated matchup between Aaron Nola and Tyler Beede. About 100 pro guys, scouts, cross-checkers, a couple general managers apparently in the house. I was texting with a scout Friday who was really worried about how he would get to watch that game. It sounded like there was overflow in the scout section, overflow for the fans, a blackout on Saturday. We had a great weekend of college baseball, finally. Who were the big winners in your mind, just in general, on a weekend like that where we finally had some real good matchups that we could sink our teeth into?
Well, yeah, certainly. I think the three showdown series that we were kind of had our eyes on, the three series between ranked teams, all really lived up to their billing. You know, and certainly South Carolina, I think, is the place to start this discussion. You know, the number one team in the country. They did take their first loss on Friday, and then, you know, I was watching that game on Saturday, and it looked like they were about to lose the series. They were down three runs in the ninth inning, and it looked like it was over. And you know, I went out to do some yard work. Picking up the yard after the ice storm.
That's right, ice storm damage.
And I came back, and South Carolina had won. I mean, it's incredible what they do over and over again in these settings where they're just, you know, it's going back to 2010, really. That's when we talked about this before, and I think maybe on the Hangout last week about how this uncanny ability to win just seems to be hot-wired into them right now. And you know, you're down three runs in the ninth, oh, no big deal. Here we come. You know, it's just, it's insane.
They have a outsized amount of belief in themselves. And I don't know if that had to come first or the fans followed. I think that came first. And now it really does feel like they're sustained by the 8,000-plus that show up basically every night at Carolina Stadium. And it also feels, Aaron, like other teams know it too. It just seems like until you get that 27th out, South Carolina's not out. It feels like everybody knows that. That's why it was so stunning to see, you know, like Arizona 2 years ago or North Carolina last year beat them in the postseason. Because really the last 4 years, South Carolina's belief is huge. And Max Schrock's been battling an injury and had the big two-run homer in that game. And they come back and win the whole series. A lot of doubleheaders over the weekend as well, Aaron. All three of these series wound up having doubleheaders, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the other thing that I think is interesting when you look at those three series to me, and I'm going to write about this a little bit in Three Strikes, but the teams that won those series in all three cases were the teams that have the better bullpens.
Right.
And the better bullpens performed, you know. And South Carolina's bullpen hasn't given up a run, earned or otherwise, in 61 innings.
It's insane. And that was one of the big questions we had about them because Tyler Webb had been so good. And for so many years in this run, I mean, they were automatic with Matt Price. And then Tyler Webb carried that on. But now Mincy and Seddon seem like they've taken it to a different level, which is pretty hard to believe.
Right. And, you know, and some of that, of course, is the strength of schedule. I mean, you know, but certainly they've carried on the legacy there. And you know, Vanderbilt's case, their bullpen's absurd, as we thought it would be coming into the year, ranked very high, you know.
On the Fit Matrix.
On the Fit Matrix. you know, but, I mean, Brian Miller has so much help now with certainly Carson Fulmer and Adam Ravinelli's flamethrowers. And you got Hayden Stone now, the freshman, who's just the latest weapon.
I mean, is unfair.
Is that breaking ball he's got is absurd, and he just comes in and mows people down with it. Nobody can hit it. What is it? 10 strikeouts, I think, in relief. In one of those games. I mean, you know, and then Florida State. You got everyday Gage Smith. You know, he's their, like we talked about on Twitter, I think, this weekend. He's their John Taylor.
Absolutely.
Their David Berg, if you will. I mean,
absolutely.
But then you got Winston at the back, and you know, it's a great story that you'll read in Three Strikes today from Mike Martin. You know, he said, well, you know, I remember they were one of those games, Jameis, they were hollering at him. And I'm leaning back and I'm thinking, I wonder if this is like when he took us 72 yards down the field in that national championship game. I don't think he's going to get rattled. You know, I mean, it's just...
That's awesome.
The depth of that bullpen, though, in addition to those two guys, they've had other guys step forward. Kenny Burkhead is a guy that kind of came out of nowhere.
Burkhead.
That is a good name. Yeah, they've got options from the left side and the right side, and you know, all three of these bullpens have depth and versatility and anchors, and I just think that set them apart compared to, you know, teams like LSU and NC State and Ole Miss. They're all really still kind of looking for answers in the bullpen, and Ole Miss's bullpen had been good. Josh right. Laxer had been good, and then this weekend he coughed up that lead in the second game.
And NC State, that was a question we had coming into the season. Really, so many of the other parts of their team looked like they had answers for it, but they lost Grant Sasser, they lost Overman, they lost Easley. They basically lost all the key pieces of their bullpen except for Andrew Wick. I keep mispronouncing his name. And Wick was very good for them in long relief in the third game, or was pretty good for them. I think he came in when the game was 4-4. And you know, he's their kind of their go-to moment of truth reliever. But after him, everyone else is kind of new, whether it's Olzak or O'Donnell. It's new guys. Doesn't mean they don't have good arms. Both Patterson brothers. Peterson, I'm sorry. They have arms. They have options. But they aren't seniors. They aren't guys who did it. And last year, you know, Tom Holliday went to the bullpen at the drop of a hat. This year, the strength of that team is supposed to be starting pitching. And it's been good. But this weekend, like you said, they got into, you know, Florida State's very good. Very, very good at home. And I guess that's the other factor to me is just Florida State just... I mean, South Carolina has clearly 8,000 fans, a decided home field advantage. Does Florida State maybe, are they in the conversation for best home field advantage in all of college baseball with their fans, with the short right field, the big screen out there, the mystique? There certainly is a mystique to playing there.
It's funny that you bring this up because I actually had forgotten this until just when you said it, but I had a dream last night about the animals of Section B singing O Canada.
You should not have admitted that.
Well, it's true. That was in my dream last night. For whatever reason, that's how much of an impression it made on me this week, because both of their fifth-inning rallies came right after they sang O Canada this weekend. And then, you know, I mean, it's just all part of that, like you said, that mystique, that tradition. They play great at home, absolutely.
The stuff that you wrote about with the longtime fan base there, I think it's unique and noteworthy because Miami is such a cosmopolitan city, and people don't think of it that way, but that's like a piece of old Miami there in Coral Gables, and that's why it's significant, that's why it's noteworthy, and it was a nice part of that story. But Florida State has that as well, and Florida State is, to me, Tallahassee is about as Florida as it gets. It's up there in the panhandle. You know, the northern Florida, I'm going to get all sociological on you again here, but having lived in Florida a little bit, and my brother lived in Tallahassee, and I've stayed there with him before in the past, Tallahassee is like South Georgia. It's like Alabama. It's like the rest of the South.
Right.
And Florida State's fans are like, in a lot of ways, fans in the rest of the South. They're different from fans in Miami, for sure. And those fans are, there's a lot of traditions in Florida State baseball fans. I feel like they have, I feel like the list of home field advantages in college baseball, if you can't make a top five without Florida State and LSU being in there.
Absolutely.
And like we talked about with LSU's fans a couple years ago, how they keep on, how you know, Matt Sink at Stony Brook talked about how they live up to their reputation, gave them a standing O when they beat LSU. Those are great fans. I'm not knocking anybody else's fans, but in my mind, college baseball fan bases, two of the top home fields I think of are LSU and Florida State. And Florida State's earned it. And I just always think it's an extra little element. Not like they need it. Coach Martin's good enough. Their talent's good enough. You know, they know what they're doing there. So they playing Florida State's hard anywhere, but in their ballpark, with that screen, with their fans, it's just a little extra element. And NC State all the time, 7-28 in Tallahassee?
Exactly.
That's amazing.
And you know, this weekend, the other thing I guess that you can take away from this series is that Florida State is just a juggernaut.
They're really good.
This might be...
You don't have to convince me.
You're a preseason pick to win the national championship.
That's right.
And, you know, with good reason. They're really, really good. And they've had a lot of great teams over a long period of time. This might be, at the end of the day, this might be their best team. And here's the thing that just jumped out to me. You talked about NC State and the comfort level about going to the bullpen or riding your starters.
Right.
This year, Florida State has three starters you could ride.
Correct.
Luke Weaver, Brandon Lee Brandt, Mike Compton, they're all really good. They're veterans.
All of them have been big winners at the college level. They've all got, I mean, Luke Weaver has stuff by any definition.
Yep.
It's not elite. It's not Beattie or Rodon stuff. But it's very good stuff, and he commands it. And Lee Brandt Compton, they rode those guys as freshmen to the College World Series a couple years ago.
So they've got those three guys, but still, they don't have to ride them deep into the game. Mike Martin said, I'm comfortable going to my bullpen anytime. If it's the fifth inning and I need a matchup lefty or whatever, hey, I mean, he's got the depth in the bullpen now that he can extend it. They're deeper on the mound than they've been in a long, long time, forever.
Yeah.
And they have the frontline guys, and they have power arms at the front and back. And you know they're going to hit like they always do, and they're sound defensively because they have veterans, and I just think they're complete.
Aaron, I'm in a March Madness mood. I always get this way this time of year with the college basketball. I'm going to throw a comp out to you. I feel like Mike Martin is almost kind of like the Jim Boeheim of college baseball in some ways. You know, Jimmy Boeheim, who I am not a fan of, always gets. You know, he talked about. I watched the 30 for 30 on ESPN last night about the Requiem for the Big East. And they talked about how Jimmy Boeheim said, oh, you know, you get labeled a whiner. I was like, well, because Jim Boeheim is a whiner. When you throw a chair at a post-game press conference and say, the referees took it away from us like they showed last night, well, you're going to be labeled a whiner when that happens. Yeah. Well, Mike Martin got that label 20-some years ago in Omaha when he complained about the fans in Omaha. And he's kind of had that label. And, you know, there are two different ways of it. But, you know, Jim Boeheim also a lot of trips deep in the NCAA tournament, but didn't have a championship until Carmelo in 2003. A lot of bridesmaids, not a lot of bride for Jim Boeheim. It's kind of been that way for Mike Martin, although, to be completely fair, Mike Martin's had a much better career than Jim Boeheim. He's much more of a giant in college baseball, for me, than Boeheim is in college basketball. But, you know, Boeheim's in the big media market, and it certainly buoys his reputation.
He's won a lot of games.
He has.
He's been a lot of good teams. I think they're selling Jim short, and I'm not a Boeheim guy either, and I think Mike Martin is.
I think he's been to three or four Final Fours total in all those years, and Mike Martin's been a lot more College World Series trips.
And Mike Martin is a whole lot more likable, for sure.
I think so. I think he's absolutely more, but it took us kind of a special kind of confluence of things for Boeheim to win a national championship. You know, I think that there was a lot of, and so that fan base really certainly celebrated, and the national media really celebrated, the New York-based national media really celebrated when Boeheim won a national championship. They just did. And I think that it will be fascinating to watch Florida State the rest of this year, because I do feel like they have an answer in a lot of different ways. They have experience everywhere, but they don't, you know, they don't have to rely, but they also have a talented freshman.
Yep.
You know, what will Ben DeLuzio be in May and June? Is he going to get it? Is he going to be a dynamic force in their lineup? Or is he just going to be a to me, he's kind of like a Tanner English kind of player.
Sure.
Very similar,
yep,
athletic,
absolutely.
Run tool. If he figures it out, the plate, boy, this guy could be a real game changer. But the X factor, the reason I picked Florida State for the national championship was Jameis Winston. He is an X factor. He's a power arm in their bullpen. And just what Mike Martin said, he is not going to go to Omaha and be pressured. It's just not going to happen. I mean, we all love Omaha, but it ain't the BCS championship game against Auburn.
Right.
With the whole thing on the line, driving the team down. It's just not. So that's a guy with talent and moxie and the ability to make a play, to make a pitch when he needs it. And I just like the way Florida State won games this week. They got into slugfest with UCF, and they won that. They just destroyed them in the next game. You have one game where you lose a 9-1, you come back to win midweek, and you come back the next day and you stomp on a team 18-1.
Yeah,
that was pretty impressive because it's hard to score runs. Yeah. And then the way they beat NC State this week, I mean, it is not. I think NC State will be back. I think they're a very good team. They're still figuring out. They still haven't hit really to me on all cylinders.
Right.
But they do need to figure out their bullpen, and that's like you said, a separator. But I think we know South Carolina's good. I think that this week was a very good reminder of how good Florida State can be. Man, it's the middle of March, so now the key for both those teams is kind of sustaining it. And Aaron, at number three, Virginia wasn't in as big of a series. I do want to touch on this, though, but Virginia and Indiana, we ran the Hoosiers out of the rankings this week. It was not easy because they did go 2-2 on the week, and they did beat Kentucky midweek, and they've got a win against Louisville. But push comes to shove, Aaron, Virginia and Indiana just aren't hitting, and it's just stunning to see. These two lineups, I think, were... And we keep talking to scouts about it with Virginia. I'm sure you've talked to people about it with Indiana. The lineup on paper should hit.
Yes.
Why do you think those two teams aren't hitting yet?
I'm flummoxed. I really am. It's the biggest mystery to me of the whole college season so far.
Because those two teams and Lafayette, Louisiana, Lafayette, those are the three teams that you would have said going into the year, three best offensive lineups on paper in the top 25. you would have said those are the three best lineups. And Lafayette's mashing. Kudos to the Raging Cajuns, now number five in the rankings. But Florida and, Virginia, I should say, and the Hoosiers, Indiana, just not hitting yet.
No, you're right. And I still, hey, it's going to happen. Okay? It's going to happen. I'm surprised it hasn't happened through 5 weeks. Virginia showed flashes of it this week. They scored 13 runs in a midweek game. They scored, eight runs, I think, on Friday.
Yep.
And then, they won two games where they didn't score. I mean, they do have, that's the one thing, I guess, about Virginia, is that they do have certainly good enough pitching to win 2-1 games. But I would feel a lot better about them if, even with Derek Fisher out, they have the personnel to be an elite offensive team. And they're not yet. And neither is certainly Indiana. I mean, I can't. This is Indiana's third losing weekend in 5 weeks. That's why we ran them out of the rankings.
Yep.
We had a lot of patience with them, but right now, okay, you got to prove it. At this point, you're in there based on your ability. And and I talked to a scout just last week who said they're going to be a good team. They're they have good players. They're going to be good. I think so too. But we need to see it.
I agree, Aaron. I feel like the stealthiest team in our top 10 in forever is Cal Poly.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a stealth team. I'm stunned that Cal Poly is 7. Matt Imhoff, I think, is the guy that everybody, if you follow college baseball, you would know. If you think of Cal Poly, you say, oh, Matt Imhoff. And he has 3 double-digit strikeout games.
Right.
He's been
14-plus strikeout games.
It's unreal. He's been outstanding. He's been super dominant. But how's Cal Poly, how have they gotten the number 7 in the rankings so far? Part of it, I guess, is other guys have lost.
Right, right.
But what's been the catalyst for the Mustangs?
Well, and we've talked a little bit about the fact that coming into the season, my only reservation about them was the pitching after Imhoff
in
rotation. And Casey Blomquist has given them an answer. And, I think Justin Calamani moved into that Sunday role. He won 2 games for them this week. That's the thing about a 6-game week for Cal Poly. They didn't play good teams. But to go 6-0...
That's not easy.
It isn't easy. I mean, they had to use... I think Calamani pitched maybe on Tuesday and Sunday or something like that. And, he pitched a total of, 12 innings or 13 innings, something. I mean, you had to get a lot out of guys. You had to use your pitching staff creatively. I think they used... Blomquist in relief one of those games also a little bit. I mean, they're not a deep pitching staff. It's not like they're Florida State where they've got 17 guys,
Right.
It's a good sign that they were able to go 6-0 and not give up very many runs at all. But I mean, they're a really good offensive team. They're performing better offensively this year. I think Nick Torres is a bona fide star, an All-America caliber player, is a right fielder with prototype right fielder tools, and he's performed. And it's nice to see Jimmy Allen, the senior, that I've always been a big Jimmy Allen fan.
Yep.
He's gotten off to a pretty decent start. Really like Jordan Ellis as just a center fielder. Reminds me of a guy they had, Logan Schaefer, several years back. He's kind of that kind of a player a little bit.
Brewers big leaguer.
Yep.
It really feels like Cal Poly is a team there, and that also is not just a push bunt team, not just a team that needs to skill it up to score runs. They do have a couple power sources with Torres and Mundell. And didn't Mundell hit, 10 home runs last year? I know mostly non-conference. But just feel like they do have that threat of power. That's just such a such a huge factor. I don't want to go too tangenty here about the offense. We could do that all day. But they have the threat of hitting home runs.
And this is probably a good time to go on that tangent because it's something we wanted to talk about. You had a good conversation about offense in college baseball with the bats the way they are right now. And the brand of play that we've seen.
I worry, Aaron, about college baseball because I worry that you're going to just lose players to participate in baseball. I worry about capital B baseball. Why would you play if you do everything right as a hitter and you get a soft line drive and that's the best you can do? Or when you do hit it, it goes to an outfielder. I mean, the bats just don't perform. And I just have talked to too many coaches over the years. And we're sponsored by Louisville Slugger. I'm sure the guys at Slugger are doing their best. But the constriction, the restrictions put on the bats have just, the offense is just out. The way you put it, every time I talk to a coach or scout, the way they see big numbers, big offensive games in college games is when the defense screws up.
Right.
The defense walks guys, then they don't make a play, they don't field a bunt. I talked to a coach in the midweek this week, and he was like, yeah, we bunted 3 times in a row. That's how we got our big inning in the 7th or 8th inning, whatever it was. 3 bunts in a row that were misplayed by the defense. That's it. And,
hey,
as a broadcaster Saturday, I saw a 2-hour Duke-Notre Dame game, and I was happy to go home on a beautiful day after 2 hours. But I've also been to a lot of 2-1 games that are 3 hours and 30 minutes because of the walks and the bad defense and the pace. And this college, I liked college baseball's identity better when its identity was offense. And I'll just remind people over and over again that these players are amateurs and they need the help. They're not as good as pros, so stop comparing them to pro ball. You know, we talk about all the time with defense and the bunts. You know, these aren't pro third basemen, so stop comparing them to pro third basemen. If a third baseman at Notre Dame or Duke, just as I saw that weekend, if a third baseman at Jordan Betts at Duke wants to go out and get better at bunt defense, he can't go out all the time and take 500 reps on balls every morning like you do in the Sally League. It's a different, just a different environment, or in the big leagues. Stop comparing them. They're apples and oranges. They're not the same. And I get tired of the comparison, and these players are amateurs. They need the help. Each of these teams maybe has what? One major league hitter in them, Aaron? Virginia is one of the best. 2008, Miami, one of the best lineups we've seen. There's not an impact big league hitter out of that lineup yet. Alonso and Grandal made the big leagues. Weeks made the big leagues. But Ryan Tocody has made the big leagues briefly. Jackson briefly. But Rabin never did. Sobolewski hasn't. And none of those guys are impact. So that's the best. That's like one of the best lineups we've seen in years. And that had four big leaguers in it. I mean, you have to put this in the correct context that these players are amateur in every sense of that word. And one of the uses of that word is amateur is like not good and almost clownish in some ways. I'm not saying these guys are clowns, but I'm saying
they're not professionals.
They're not professionals. They're not that good. They need the help. So I'm getting a little tired of watching these bats. And I can't imagine what it's like as a coach. And what I really can't imagine, Aaron, is what it's like as a 14-year-old kid trying to hit with these bats when you're going from the little league size field to the bigger field. It would be discouraging as hell. I'll tell you, lacrosse would look really fun. You know, you run around, you hit guys, you get rewarded when you do something right. It doesn't happen consistently in baseball anymore. I'm a little tired of it. I want some offense back in college baseball. I want the bats to not be such a factor. So I don't know if the ball will help that much. I hope it does. But I hope that people are worried about participation rates, because I know some of the coaches I've talked to are.
I think that's a great point, the participation rate.
I'm not saying screw the safety, but safety cannot be the only concern. And safety is not it. It's fear of lawsuits. And isn't that the fear? Isn't that the big... Well, because I feel like the rolled bats were crazy. There's no doubt.
Right.
I don't want to go back to the minus
five. But we addressed that already when they banned the composite barrels.
Right.
And then we had wasn't I thought that, a pretty good balanced game.
I thought so too. I like offense. It wasn't too much, but it was an offensive identity. I thought that was good.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Do it.
And I can't believe we're talking about the bats again, but it's important. It really
I think
is.
It is. It fired me up. The way Mick Aoki at Notre Dame put it really crystallized it for me, and Chris Pollard seemed to agree. It's just been cumulative over the last couple of years. But play devil's advocate.
So devil's advocate, I got a text this weekend, and I'm going to say the coach's name because he's been pretty outspoken about it. Ray Birmingham at New Mexico. This is a guy who comes from an offensive program. That's the identity of that program. They scored runs with the old bats. They scored runs with the new bats. But he texted and said, you know, I think a lot of these big-time programs are afraid that we've got too much parity now with these bats, and that's why they want to go back to the old bats. He thinks that the new bats lend themselves to parity and allow the lesser schools to compete, because if you can throw strikes, you don't have to have a big arm, you know. You don't have to have all of the big premier power hitters. If you throw strikes and you defend and you have a veteran team like Central Arkansas last year is a team that I keep thinking of because they didn't have pro talent, and they won a lot of games, went to regional, performed. You know, maybe it does level the playing field a little bit more. Now, I'm not sure that, you know, I mean, I think there's other factors here. I think, first of all, changing the ball.
It feels like that's going to help. They've researched that. I think that's an acknowledgement, number one, that they need more offense in the game.
Yep.
And number two, I applaud the NCAA listening to the coaches on that and wanting to improve it, acknowledging that there is an issue.
And my expectation is the ball, in some ways, will be good for teams that don't have big power arms, because everyone I talk to says, you know, your two-seamer gets more life with the lower seams.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe if you have a sinker ball guy, maybe he'll even be more effective. I don't know. I mean, I feel like that's something to think about.
I always thought the old bats actually were, the more offensive game was an equalizer, because it took a player, and I'm just gonna, we're just using names, no offense to anybody, but like a guy like a Dan Paolini, you know, for Siena. and took him from a guy who was a pretty strong guy, was a pretty good hitter, into a really good hitter, a guy who had 20 home runs every year. I always thought the old bats were like the three-point line. You know, they were the equalizer. You didn't have to be as talented, and you could hit a three-run homer you were as likely to hit a three-run homer as the good pro hit guy was. So I think
that makes sense. I think you're right.
So with all due respect to Coach Birmingham, I think that there's always going to be that thought if you're in Ray Birmingham's shoes and you are Captain Underdog, and that's always been what he's been, that anything that the big guys are complaining about, they're complaining about it because they're the big dogs and people are catching on them. So I always felt the old bats were the equalizer. And I feel like college baseball's parity has been pretty good. You know, the more schools invest in college baseball, that's what's going to make the parity better, not the equipment. For me, I always thought old bats helped teams. You could just slug your way to Omaha. You could slug your way to a regional win. You didn't have to have great pitching depth.
You had. You're right. I mean, you had the Southwest Missouri States and the San Jose States and
the guys who throw hard. The best arms are going to go to the biggest schools. That is just how it's always going to be. That's where the scholarship money is spent. That's where the investment is, and the big schools have more to invest. So they're always going to have the best arms, and those got equalized by the old bats. So that's where, to me, the old bats were like a 3-point line in college basketball, where you could three ball your way into an upset. So with all due respect to Coach Birmingham, I actually disagree. I feel like the better athletes are the better defensive teams, and the better athletes are going to beat these bigger schools. So that translates to better defense, and that's how you win in Omaha. For me, I don't agree with him, but I'm not in the trenches every day like he is. So if I see more evidence of it, I'll defer. But to me, the old bats were more of an equalizer. But I'm concerned. Just doing more games now.
Yeah.
I'm concerned. So by the end of last year, I did see Florida Atlantic hit for the home run cycle in 4 innings. You know, and they were an experienced offense. They had big veteran guys in that offense. So it can be done.
And I saw Chris Bryant hit 31 home runs up close, and he made that ballpark look small. Yeah, in the marine layer.
So it can be done, but it's concerning to me when I see teams that we thought were really going to be offensive, and they can't hit.
Yeah.
That makes me sit up and take notice. So we'll see. But it is frustrating to watch the lack of offense. I just cannot imagine what it's like for a coach and for a player to square one up and have it go nowhere. I've talked to Trey Turner about it, the one off David Berg last year. I can't relate to that feeling, how discouraging that must be, but I really think about it, what it's like for that 14, 15, 16-year-old. And I'm going to try to work on the story with the National High School Invitational here, and I think there's something there as a story idea, but I worry about baseball participation rates. That's what I worry about. So that, as J.J. Cooper would say, is what a... Aaron, how about we get back into this with a team that actually did score some runs this weekend, which was Rice. I wanted to ask you about the Owls because they've had the injury to Jordan Stevens, and they've responded with two back-to-back impressive weeks. And now this weekend, they go down to Florida International, and they sweep a Panthers team that we think fairly highly of.
Yeah.
How'd Rice do it, and what does this say about – is Conference USA still theirs to lose?
Yes, exactly. I think that's exactly what this weekend showed was – they're still the top dog, I think their offense is coming around, and we thought they would be a pretty good offensive team
right
into the year, and they struggled early on to score runs like a lot of people did.
Right.
And now they're starting to come around a little bit, and FIU does have a pretty decent pitching staff. I mean, it's not huge arms, but they've got some veterans, and they've got about 8 guys they feel pretty good about, and so I think that's a loud statement for Rice, and I feel like you've got some really nice pieces up and down the lineup. But I mean, John Clay Reeves had a nice weekend for him.
Yeah.
Michael Aquino is a strong guy that's going to hit home runs and drive in runs, and certainly Skylar Ewing's had a pretty good start to the year. I mean, they've had some guys perform for them, and I like the table setters. I think they've got enough depth on the mound too. I mean, I think Blake Fox is one of those overlooked guys. Who he's just a quality left-hander who's kind of like in the Brad Stone mold a little bit. Maybe not quite as much velocity as Brad Stone, but
like, wasn't it Tyler Duffy who Rice had a couple years ago? Is he kind of that kind of guy? Maybe not as much velocity as Duffy had.
Yeah, probably. I think he's got more pitchability than Duffy, and probably less stuff. Okay. But, I mean, he does have a good breaking ball.
And then Chase McDowell is another guy who we've kind of, Wayne Graham has kind of been waiting for in the Rice program to two-way talent.
Yep.
Has always had arm strength. Feels like he maybe did, was that a breakthrough for him to, is it the long, it feels like that's the longest quality outing I've seen him have that I can remember.
He's been good a couple of weeks now this year. I mean, I feel like he's starting to finally put it together on the mound and offensively. I mean, he's exactly right. He's one of those two-way guys we've been waiting on and waiting on.
He's had injury issues. Mm-hmm. Didn't he have Tommy John? Or no? I thought he had some kind of injury.
I don't recall.
Okay. But, yeah, off the top of my head, I don't remember which injury, but feels like he missed time. But they need him. He feels like he's starting to come through.
Absolutely. And you know, he's given them some physicality in the lineup, and he's given them a really versatile bullpen piece. So, you know, there have been a few of those guys. I mean, Nick Howard for Virginia is kind of
right.
Has also flourished in a similar role as a guy that, you know, has found a home in the bullpen. You can stretch him out like they did this weekend when they needed to, but also is a real run producer in the middle. I mean, he's kind of their Nick Howard.
And I'm going to give you two options as we talk on the Baseball America College podcast. What do you want to talk about next? The opening weekend in the SEC with teams like Tennessee. I don't know, we've talked too much about the Vols this year, but they've quietly moved up to number 18 in our rankings. Or do you want to talk about the new teams that we brought in at the back of the rankings?
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the SEC first.
Okay.
You know, I guess we've talked enough about Vanderbilt and LSU.
Certainly.
But I think, you know, that series to me was certainly compelling. And it kind of played out the way I expected it to play out, where Nola, you know, I mean, won. Well, he didn't win, I guess, but he pitched really well. And LSU won the game that he pitched.
Right.
And then Vanderbilt won the series because Vanderbilt is just better after Beattie in the rotation.
Than LSU is.
And LSU, you know, they're a good team, certainly. I mean, good for them they didn't get swept by, I think, a really good Vanderbilt team. But for me, I think it's clear that South Carolina and Vanderbilt are the class of the SEC right now.
Pretty crazy to just look at after one weekend and no one in the SEC could pull off a sweep.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've already ranked 11 Southeastern Conference teams this year.
And Auburn's got to be not too far off the radar now. I mean, Auburn just, they took a series from Texas A&M. They have a sweep of Mercer, which, you know, Mercer got back on track this weekend by I think they took 2 out of 3 from Kennesaw State. So, you know, the Mercer
Correct.
Team, and Mercer's, what are they, 16-6, John? Is that what that says?
Yeah, 16-6.
You know, so they're, I think they're going to be a good team. So I feel like Auburn now, that's a 12th team that I could conceivably see getting into the rankings at some point this year.
I mean, is it conceivable for this league to get 12 teams?
No.
In the ranking?
Yeah.
In the 60 field of 64?
It just won't happen. I mean,
okay.
I think I could see 10, but boy, I mean, it's amazing to me, by the way, as a tangent, that the SEC, with 14 teams in the league, only got 3 in basketball.
I think I saw someone, I think that's right, some league official saying, you know, this is a point of emphasis for us. I mean, clearly, hey, you know, the SEC has the number one national seed in Florida. Mm. I mean, you know, and the SEC's got 3 national championships in the last, that I can remember, with Kentucky and then the 2 for Florida in 06-07. So it's not like the SEC hasn't been good at the top in college basketball, but clearly is not an emphasis in the league. That's not the league's identity, and never really has been. I mean, Kentucky has, I think, I'm pretty sure Kentucky's won like 60% all time of SEC regular seasons. I mean, in basketball. I mean, it's been so dominant in the history of the SEC. I'm probably overestimating it because the SEC does go back to like 1933, but, you know, the Baron, not Baron von Raschke, but Adolph Rupp, you know, dominated the Southeastern Conference for so long, and it's not like Kentucky's been bad under John Calipari. So,
but the point is,
tangent.
Yeah.
But I would say a strength of school, strength of sport. Yes, you see, it's a football conference, but afterwards, what is it next? Baseball or gymnastics? I mean,
it's a baseball league. I mean, for me, it's,
no doubt.
You know, it's
well for us, of course.
For us, of course, it is. But I mean, you know, this is the depth of this league, though. It's so more than ever this year, and you know, Auburn. You know, I know Sonny Galloway really likes his pitching staff there. He thinks that's a legit staff, and some of their young players have really settled in nicely. You know, another team that has a legit two-way guy with Keegan Thompson. We were just talking about, you know, Howard and McDowell. Certainly, Keegan Thompson's a stud, as we thought he would be.
You know. Yeah, he's given up 5 runs all year. That's not bad. That's not bad at all. But Tennessee, I think, Aaron, we both thought could be dangerous. I think we both thought they were. Would you have them? Did you project them as a regional team coming into the year? I don't believe you did.
They were right on the edge, and I think, I mean, you know, how many? Because that's the thing is, how many can you really project they're going to get in one league? I mean, there's 11 or 12 teams here that we like,
and they've played a soft schedule too. Purdue is a very good, Quinnipiac, LaSalle, but they swept that series from UNLV. And now back-to-back weeks, they've gone on the road and beaten Arizona State and Missouri. And it's especially impressive to me that they've done it after losing on Friday.
Right.
So they don't have that one dominant starter. But this team seems like the talent level's up and the athleticism level is up the Vols.
And Nick Williams has actually pitched pretty well on Friday. And just, you know, they lost the game after him. I think, in the bullpen. So, I mean, I still am not sold on their starting pitching. It hasn't been, you know, aside from Williams, it hasn't been very consistent.
Okay.
But they've got some nice bullpen pieces. Andy Cox has done a good job for them. He's kind of been like a swingman, like a bridge guy. And I really like Drake Owenby, and he gave him three innings, I think, on Sunday. As a left-hander with power stuff, good curveball, and he's a bulldog. So they've got a couple of nice pieces there. Some JUCO guys, they give them some depth on the mound. But they, you know, I'd like to see more consistent starting pitching. But other than that, this team they look pretty complete. I mean, their offense is very good, and their defense is very good. And the sophomore class, the Simcox, Christian Stewart, Vincent Jackson, those guys have played well. And then we've got the veterans who can just hit. Scott Price and Will Maddox fit that mold of just those guys that are just hitting machines. Hard nosed blue collar players, guys that you really love to have on your team. So. I think the lineup is deep 1-9, and they've got physicality and athleticism, and they sure feel like a regional team to me.
Yeah, they've already won back-to-back series on the road in league play. They're home to Auburn. That'll be a really fascinating series next weekend. And then, it never gets easy in the league, but if you just talked about at the start of this, South Carolina and Vanderbilt are the top two teams, we believe, and next 2 weeks after Auburn, at South Carolina, home to Vanderbilt. It would certainly mean a lot for Dave Serrano and for Tennessee. Vanderbilt's their in-state rival. To win that series would be pretty huge. Florida goes very young in its rotation. They win a series against Arkansas. Are you worried at all about the Razorbacks? They're 9-7.
Mm-hmm.
They seem like that's the team that maybe we have the most worry about. It feels like Arkansas they've lost four straight games before winning that last one at Florida, Aaron, and it just hasn't been easy for the Razorbacks yet. I mean, I think we both have a lot of faith, obviously, in that coaching staff. Their track record inspires a lot of confidence. But it doesn't feel like Arkansas has kind of hit on all cylinders yet, even though Brian Anderson, the preseason All-American, is the guy. He's hit a little bit, but the rest of that team just hasn't gotten it going consistently.
No, that's right. And this has been a recurring issue for them now for several years, even going back to when they had Zach Cox and
Kentucky
Wilkins.
Corollary, like them and Kentucky are a little similar in that regard, but obviously Arkansas had more success after maybe some slow starts.
Right. I mean, but you know, to me, the thing is they haven't hit for average for years now. That's been a recurring issue.
Gotcha.
For them. They're still one of those teams that tends to be more productive offensively than the average shows.
But they maximize it when they get guys on base.
Right. But right now, I don't know. I mean, I think because the SEC is so deep, this feels like a team that maybe, could be in some trouble. And I mean, they've got some nice pieces. They do have some nice starters. Jalen Beeks has done well on that Friday roll. Chris Oliver has pitched well in the rotation. I mean, they're just, I don't think they're as deep on the mound, certainly, as they were last year.
It's hard to be.
No, yeah, they were really deep.
The last two years, I mean, their bullpen was so elite.
Yeah.
I mean, it was as good as it gets in terms of power arms and guys who got outs in college baseball.
And it's not anymore because, for one thing, two of the nice pieces in the bullpen last year are now in your starting rotation.
Right.
Beeks and Oliver.
Right.
And then, of course, they lost a bunch of the other guys, Suggs and et cetera. But, this is – I don't know. I feel like with Tennessee jumping up, with Auburn surging maybe, I mean – A&M and Arkansas are the teams now that were in our rankings in the preseason that you wonder if, at this point, 5 weeks into the season, it feels like we were too high on those teams heading into the year because they haven't scored runs consistently, even though they have arms. A&M has arms, and they're not,
For the two times that A&M's gone on the road, they've lost series.
Yeah.
They're 1-5 on the road. At Fresno, they got swept. at Auburn. So
I seem to recall that was a real issue for them last year, was going on the road.
Well, obviously, you know, they have Florida at home next weekend. You know, every SEC road series is tough, but if you're going to look at a road schedule for them, you know, they're at Georgia, which is not a bad series. If you're going to, you know, let's just be honest, if you're going to pick a team that you want to play on the road this year in the SEC, Georgia's toward the top of the list. I mean, I know Scott Strickland's told his team that. Kudos to the Bulldogs. They rallied, what was it, an 11-game win streak that got snapped
yeah.
in the last two games of the Mississippi State series. I guess that's the other question I have for you, Aaron. Mississippi
last
State,
year, by the way, John, to finish yeah, me, sorry to interrupt, but no. A&M was 6-14 on the road last year.
I was just stalling for time for you to find that, so yeah. Well done. So, yeah, that's a concern at the two-season trend of can they get their act together on the road. And Mississippi State, I mean, 15-8, Aaron, they certainly rallied to win that series at Georgia, and it's always great to win a series on the road, but they got Vanderbilt at home next weekend. I mean, the left field Lions better come out strong for the Bulldogs, because it just feels like that's – they haven't hit on all cylinders yet either.
They haven't. And you know, to some degree, I understand that – you know, I think John Cohen's right. I mean, the first month of the season, it makes sense to try out different combinations, and, you know, you're going to take some losses. And last year, they did the same thing. They weren't great in the first half of the year, and then they heated up. I thought it was very smart for them to finally start Ross Mitchell.
Right.
And lo and behold, he gave him a complete game, you know, and they won.
That guy's really good.
He's really good.
I mean,
I guess it was he hadn't been comfortable starting, whatever. You know, you got to make it work. That you need to get more than two innings out of your starter.
Yeah.
And they did, finally, by putting him in the rotation. But, I mean, they're still fighting it in the rotation. Ben Bracewell wasn't the answer on Friday.
Right.
You know, I mean, they've got Trevor Fitz. You know, he's been up and down. Certainly.
They seem to have found a role for Lindgren. You know, we thought Jacob Lindgren last year coming in was the guy who could maybe make that step and replace Chris Stratton.
And
he wasn't that guy.
Right.
But they found a role for him to be successful in.
In my opinion, they can afford to use Mitchell as a starter, because you've got Lindgren now as your bridge guy to get to Holder. And you still have other, you know, you got depth in the bullpen. You got Miles Gentry. You got a lot of guys back there. You don't need to use Mitchell as a crutch. I think, you know, I understand he's got a rubber arm. He could influence multiple games over the course of a weekend. But I'd rather get 8 or 9 innings out of him as a starter and win the game.
And that influences more than one game. When you
yes,
get 8
does.
Or 9 innings,
yes,
you win that game, and your bullpen's fresh for the next game. Yeah. That influences multiple games, you know. It's easy for us to sit here and say, I understand as a coach how you want to have that security blanket of a great bullpen. So that's kind of one other theme of this podcast, is the great bullpen. And last but not least, we brought in Houston. We brought in the Houston Cougars this week. And we also dropped Miami to 25. We also brought in San Diego. You've written about both these teams, I believe, in 3 strikes already this year. I know you've written about San Diego. Houston, just again, I think we talked about them actually in the podcast last week a little bit. Just feels like Houston just has been so consistent this year already. I guess these are the two John Moores universities. It was San Diego State where John Moores built his ballpark. But the ballpark at the University of Houston. What got these two teams into our top 25 rankings, the Cougars and the Toreros?
Well, they've just both been really pretty good for the first 5 weeks. And Houston had the one losing weekend at the Houston College Classic, where they lost a couple of one-run games to Texas and TCU, but they beat Texas Tech. They have some, you know, they had a nice, I thought, West Coast trip last weekend, where they beat USC and UCLA. Lost the game to Pepperdine, but you know, no shame certainly in that. And then they've got a couple of midweek wins against Baylor and Rice. So, and then I think sweeping Michigan is a nice series. I still kind of like that Michigan team. They haven't played very well yet, but you know, they've got some.
They played a lot of good teams.
They played a tough schedule.
I gotta tell you, Aaron, my first instinct was not to look for Houston in the American Athletic Conference.
Right.
It just does not. But that is an intriguing baseball league for as long as it's going to be together.
Right.
Houston, obviously, Louisville will leave the league after this year, but. You know, Memphis's program's improved.
Yeah.
UConn's interesting. You know, South Florida. I don't know who stays in this league long term, but obviously Temple's out after this year. Will that hurt this team getting bids? I mean, Temple's. I gotta assume that Temple's. Record will not wind up being very good this year.
Right.
I certainly hope for a team like Houston or Louisville's sake that the league RPI doesn't take too big of a hit. If Temple puts up a really bad record, because Your RPI takes a hit. It includes all the teams, just the good teams at the top. And boy, if Temple winds up with a bad record after with all their fighting this year, that could be rough for Houston. But
I have to imagine it's going to be at least a two-bid league, though, because I think Louisville and Houston are both really good. I think they're going to have. I mean, the fact that Houston's 15-3 and has played a pretty decent schedule, they should have a pretty good RPI, I would imagine. And I think they're for real. San Diego. To me, the last 2 weeks, going on the road to Oklahoma State and winning that series,
yep.
And then midweek win against Fullerton, and then sweeping a road series at BYU. This is one of the few teams that has scored runs.
Yes, exactly.
And that stands out. And they've got enough pitching. I mean, I do like those three lefties in their rotation, but. They're a decent club, I think, and San Diego State was right there in the mix also. I like San Diego's body of work a little bit more, but San Diego State was in our top 25 mix. Certainly Alabama is a team that we almost brought back in after they won that series against Kentucky. So there's still other teams here that we like, and Miami holding on by a thread there at the back of the rankings. But, tumbled from what, 13 to,
yeah.
to 25, it's a significant fall. But, they played a tough schedule at least. They're 3-3 against the top 25. But they're only 11-9 overall. It's a hard team to figure out. That's one of those that
they really are, Aaron.
And so is, and so is Indiana. I mean, that's a team that I just don't get why they haven't hit. I don't get it.
It's not all the bats. Everybody's using the bats, but I mean,
and Indiana scored a ton of runs with those bats last year.
They did. It's so weird. But to me, the baseball's such a mental game. And, Indiana feels like they need one of those weekends, and Miami, too, where they just have a week where every little dribbler rolls through,
yeah.
The pop fly, the play is a may in the outfield, and they get a couple of those to go in, and that's where you get some confidence. But I think the mental part of the game feels like Miami this week, they just couldn't get things going in the right direction. And, kudos to Georgia Tech. That's a big weekend for Georgia Tech to win that series. Because Georgia Tech, and they've been to regionals every year since 1999,
I think they missed one
other year in there,
but
it's a pretty consistent regional program. And you think of Georgia Tech as a close to elite program, and that's not elite level talent this year for the Yellow Jackets. That's a big series win for Georgia Tech to take care of business there.
Yeah, and you get guys like Devin Stanton coming in there and throwing six strong innings on Sunday. That's a guy that has not been very good for them.
And they lost Alex Cruz out of their bullpen. He's out for the year.
He's dismissed.
That's
guess.
It. Yeah, dismissed from the team. I mean, that's a big loss for them. So. It's just not a lock that Georgia Tech's a regional team to me. So
no, it's not.
That's
certainly
gonna
not.
That's going to help them quite a bit.
And that shows you to me the difference between the ACC and the SEC this year. And we can wrap up, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I mean, Georgia Tech coming into the year was the seventh team in the ACC for me. We projected it as a 7-bid league, and Georgia Tech feels really fringy. And even North Carolina is the sixth team. I think they're okay. And they've battled big weekend
for them to go win on the road. I mean, it's Maryland, doesn't have great.
Maryland's
pedigree.
Got some arms, though.
I like Maryland's team. Yeah. I just about to say, I kind of like the direction John Sheff has
no
that
doubt.
Program going in, headed into the Big Ten next year. But I feel like Maryland baseball, that's not a given that you're going to win that series at Maryland anymore.
And Wake Forest has been shown some signs of life. They're plucky. There's a lot of teams here that are, I feel like, pretty mediocre after the top five.
The bottom of the league right now, you're looking at BC, Notre Dame, and Pitt, the three of the Big East refugees. Is there another Big East refugee in the rest of this league?
Virginia Tech,
sort of. Yeah, sort of. But, Miami never played Big East baseball.
Right.
But Pitt, BC, and Notre Dame combined are 1-17, that's not a good start. Notre Dame's been on the road. They were at NC State and at Duke. Got Pat Connaughton back this weekend. Maybe that helps change things for them. But Notre Dame really not hitting. Not an offensive club. Not a physical club.
And BC has lost 9 in a row now after they struggled mightily last year. They thought they were going to be better. I don't know.
Not easy. So that is going to drag this league down. That could have an effect on whether that seventh team gets a bid.
Yep.
I think if you're looking at the seventh place team in the ACC and their resume is fringy, and that 11th place team in the Southeastern Conference and their resume is fringy, the committee says they don't look at conference affiliation. I think that's not true, but I got a feeling that at some point the RPI is going to be better for that 11th place team in the SEC just because the league is so strong and deep then it's going to be for that seventh place ACC team.
And there are 11 teams in the SEC that I like better than the seventh team in the ACC.
There you go. And honestly,
there might be 12 teams in the SEC that I like better than the seventh.
I was going to say, I think you're selling the SEC a little short because we've talked about 12. I mean, really, Georgia and Missouri are the only teams where it's not.
And how is Georgia different, really, from Georgia Tech this year? I mean, they're both young. I like Georgia's young talent. Georgia has shown signs of life. They've been tough. You know, have they played yet?
Georgia won 1-0.
So, I mean, you know, Georgia might be better than Georgia Tech, and that's the 13th, maybe, team in the SEC? Come on.
It is.
I mean, the SEC is so much deeper. Yes, I like Florida State, NC State, Virginia.
At the top. No doubt.
And I still think Clemson's going to be pretty good. And I still think Miami, at the end of the year, will be pretty good. But they haven't performed.
Right. And North Carolina's pretty good as well. Sure. I mean, you know, they clearly know how to win over there.
But there's a steep drop-off after that.
I don't disagree. Great way to end it. Aaron, great stuff as always. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back with next week's College Baseball Podcast. Every Monday we do it here. We'll be back on Friday. Aaron, you're leaving for a big Midwest trip. I'm very excited about this. Tour of the Heartland, the I-35 tour. We will see. We'll figure out what we're going to do with the hangout on Friday. We might have to do that like early in the morning before you leave. I don't know. We'll see how we do the hangout. I like the hangouts on Friday. They've been fun.
Yeah.
But you will be going from basically flying into Dallas and leaving from Omaha. Is that how it winds up?
Wichita.
Wichita, of course, the Wichita Airport.
A little bit of a backtrack after the Nebraska leg.
But so we'll talk a lot about the Midwest in the next couple weeks here on the podcast and on the upcoming Google Plus Hangouts. We're sponsored by Louisville Slugger. And for Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.